This is episode 136 of Drunk on Comics, brought to you by InkWhiskey.com. I was talking to our good buddy Jay.
I love talking to Jay.
Yeah, well, you know, he kind of hit me up and he's like, "Hey," he's like, "you know, you want to talk some comics and shit tonight?" And I'm like, "Absolutely." So I'm talking, and one of the things I love about him and his podcast, and for you know, the people that are at home, you can look him up at anelegantweapon.ca. Great guy, awesome, fun show. But yeah, he loves to edit, and he did a really nice job, like, with, you know, like, just clipping in, like, the little sound effects and you know, because we had some technical difficulties.
Okay.
So, you know, he was able to clean the majority of those up because I was just streaming. I wasn't actually on Wi-Fi, and so there were some lag issues there. But I'm a little disappointed because he cut out my best joke.
You actually had a good joke?
I thought so. Well,
maybe there's a reason why he cut it.
Okay, well, he was talking about how Target Canada basically just closed up shop.
Like, who are they targeting in Canada?
Yeah, see, and you bitch about my jokes. But, no, Target, you know, went to Canada, they set up all these stores, and then they're like, nope, that's it, boop. And he's talking about, yeah, he's like, so, you know, because they're losing all these jobs and Target's just pulling out. And I go, well, that's stupid. Everybody knows when you go to Canada where you have to wear a condom. That way you don't have to pull out.
Ba-doom-tsh.
Yeah.
It was, okay, that's not a terrible joke.
No, it wasn't. Although,
well, why'd he cut it then?
I don't know. Maybe just because it had nothing to do with comics or anything else we were talking about. But now my favorite part was at the end. He's like, we were kind of comparing the difference between how I am on this show to how I am on his show. And he's like, yeah, he goes, you just get to let loose. I go, oh, no, this is great because, you know, unlike Matt, Tony, and Kevin, you haven't heard all of my jokes. So, anyway, guys, welcome to Drunk on Comics. My name's Derek.
My name is Tony.
And big announcement today, Tony.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, I was glad that I was informed beforehand.
Yeah, well, you know about this, so you just didn't necessarily know I was going to make the announcement today.
Okay.
So, it's official. We are.
You're getting married?
No. We are going
to be. You having a baby?
No.
Damn, I'm spoiling this announcement.
Yeah, you are. You're just and the show. You're just ruining it.
We got picked up for a TV show?
We have faces for radio, buddy. No, it's official. May 15th, 16th, and 17th in beautiful Novi, Michigan. Drunk on Comics will be back at Motor City Comic Con 2015.
Yay! Of our fans in the background, yeah!
Yeah, so cannot wait. I mean, everybody knew we were going to be there, but now it's the official announcement. So from here on out, you're going to be hearing us talking a lot about Motor City. And
I can't wait for that show. They've already started announcing some people, and
yeah,
there's some names already that they're. I mean, normally you hold the big punches for later on, but they're coming out swinging.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, a couple of the comic ones that that I'm looking forward to: Simon Bisley, who he is.
we had a long, fun drunken night with him.
Yeah, a couple years back. Great guy. You know, a lot of our good friends are going to be there. But one in particular that I'm really interested in is Ted McKeever, who you guys have heard me talking about, the Superannuated Man comic book. He's going to be there, so that one I am ecstatic to get a chance to meet him and actually, you know, talk to him in person.
Talk to the real thing.
Yeah, it's funny because I saw a picture of him and, oh, yeah, he looks like the Superannuated Man. So that was... That's kind of surprising, but Brian Polito is going to be there, Joe Prado, just to name a couple, James O'Barr. But go to MotorCityComicCon.com, check it out. You can pre-purchase your tickets. I would highly recommend it, and cool. So, Tony, should we get things kicked off with Off the Shelf?
Yeah, and why not you start it?
All right.
Since I'm not ready.
Why not I start it? all right, this week, I've got a book from a publisher that I don't talk too much about. And actually, you don't talk too much about it either, but you know, this is one of those where we both have a big appreciation for this publisher. Valiant.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, this is Ivar Time Walker, number one, from Valiant Comics. And this was written by Fred Van Lent, or Fred Van Lente. I don't know if it, I apologize in that. Art was Clayton Crane. Colors are Brian Reber. And this is kind of one of those almost Terminator-style time travel things.
Okay.
You know, where...
Killer robot coming back.
Kind of, yeah. You know, coming to kill this woman.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got this guy that's basically doing the come with me if you want to live kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And while I'm reading this book, you know, I'm sitting there, you know, saying, okay, now, this woman is a physicist and she's working on stuff. And basically, the idea is that she discovers time travel. And because she discovers time travel,
she like scientist type, like she's yeah. working on it, not just like a mystical portal. Like
yeah, like she's doing all okay. these different experiments, like big time, like top of her field, and discovers time travel and how to make it work. And this is a very interesting book because. This is one of those things, I think the reason why I like this book is because time travel, you love time travel.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those things where everybody's like, oh my God, well, you know, if you step on a butterfly, you know, you change everything else. And in here, the guy's like, don't worry about it. It's not that big of a deal. You're overthinking shit. So it just kind of lets you have a little bit more fun
mm-hmm.
with it. But... You know, there's always something that goes on where, you know, they this guy who's trying to save her, this Ivar guy, at one point he runs into another version of himself as the, you know, they're passing each other time traveling and their two versions are in the same time at once.
Okay.
And she's like, I thought if you saw yourself time traveling, he goes, you watch too many movies.
So it's having fun with knowing the paradoxes of time travel and yeah. making lighthearted of no, that's not real how yeah. it really happens.
Yeah, no, there's way too much other stuff going on. But he talks about how these like little wormholes are natural and they open up around us all the time. They're very small, we don't really notice them because they're literally like a nanosecond open and gone. And he goes, where do you think all those lost pens and sunglasses and keys and everything else go to kind of thing? And I'm like, you know what? Like Van Lent just did a really nice job making you believe that those things have always been around just in such smaller form. Because how many times have you just lost something and it's just fucking gone and it never to be returned? So that was kind of the fun thing. But I was talking with my girlfriend while I was reading this, and I am going to spoil some stuff here, but it's okay because I think that the way this book was written, obviously I would not have asked this question if it wasn't set up properly. But my question was, why is it, excuse me, whenever you get one of these stories, whether it's a comic, a book, a movie, TV show, that the first guy to come to the girl that says, come with me if you want to live. She's like, okay, how come, why is it always the good guy that gets there first?
I don't know, but it'd make for a short movie if the bad guy goes, come with me if you want to die.
Or if the bad guy just needs to convince her that he's the good guy. And the good guys are the bad guys.
So that'd be a good story plot line where the good guy keeps trying to chase them. This bad guy needs the person for something, so needs to keep her alive. But it's like, no, that's the guy chasing us. You see him, he's chasing us, even though that...
Guess what? That's what Ivar Time Walker is.
Awesome!
Yeah. And I'm like, okay, this is sweet. You know, I'm not going to spoil some of like the little catch at the end, but just a great, great story. And, you know, it really does a nice job. You know, I will say too here that, you know, Clayton Henry did a really, really solid job on this book too with the characters, because there's a lot of emotion and, you know, in their faces, and the story flows pretty nicely here. Did a really good job too, just in some of the basic breakdowns. So he helped kind of fool you where you're like seeing this Ivar guy. You know, they're little things, and I can't put my finger on them exactly, but where you're like going, he doesn't seem like he's that good. Why don't I trust this guy? You know, and I think a lot of it had to do with the artwork and how Van Lent's story was told in here. So, cool story. It was a little confusing at first, but that's because there's a lot going on in here. It gets sorted out really quickly. I had fun with this one. You know, I didn't really know what to expect. I'm just like, oh, okay, that's a cool looking cover. Oh yeah, all right, let's. I open it up. I'm like, okay, nice looking artwork. I'm gonna give it a shot. I was looking for something new this week. So there just really wasn't a ton out on my poll this week. So I'm glad I picked this one up. I hope you guys do too.
Okay. Well, I picked up something. You picked up something new. I picked up something old and true. Guardians of the Galaxy number 23. Now, I had a lot of books this week, which I knew was going to happen after many weeks of just kind of having a sparse spread. Now I'm having them all fall in the same week. And out of all the books that I read, there's a lot of reveals, and I'm going to try to throw in some things later on throughout the show of just wanting to review these books. So I'm just going to kind of bring up the book just to talk about a bit. This one, I think, had the biggest overall impact on the story as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And just it was awesome. What's been going on in Guardians of the Galaxy is they're kind of doing a side mission to go to the symbiote planet. Actually, they're not trying to go to the symbiote planet, but Venom, the symbiote, is trying to go back home. As I may have mentioned last time, when the symbiote was kind of taking over each of the members of Guardians of the Galaxy, and like Groot, when he got transformed, and it was badass looking. This, they finally arrive, and the repercussions of just the story that they've come up with this planet, looking back on the Spider-Man and everything, doesn't retcon, it actually makes things look cooler. And this has been written by Brian Michael Bendis, art by Valerio Sheedy, and colors by Jason Keith. And first off,
before we get into this, I have to interrupt. Is Star-Lord in this?
Yes.
Okay. Is he still dating Kitty Pryde?
Yes.
I have to share a personal story because this one.
Okay.
At the hockey game on Friday, being the nerds that my girlfriend and I are, we're sitting there talking about comic books and shit like that at the hockey game. She is pissed that Star-Lord is dating Kitty Pryde.
Why?
Because she's like, he's way too cool to be dating, you know, Kitty Pryde and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, and she's like, she started going, well, asking who else, you know, he had dated or she dated. And I'm like, well, I'm like, obviously you got Colossus. And I'm like, and she's like, well, Colossus is, you know, not really. And I'm like, and I said, I think most recently I go, She was dating Bobby Drake.
Yeah,
and she's
Iceman,
like,
yeah.
And she's like, she goes, I hate Bobby Drake, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, why? She goes, Bobby Drake is not cool. And I go, no, he's cold as ice. I had to share that one because it was just so terrible.
What I love is just that she's getting so upset about fake romances of fake people.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Okay, if we're going to do side stories of Star-Lord, then I'm going to just bring up this one quickly.
Okay.
My brother's friend on Facebook said something of wanting to be, you know, if for New Year's, his New Year's resolution is to try to become Star-Lord. And people were like, ah, yeah, that's good. And my brother goes, who?
come on, Star Wars, man.
That's exactly what his buddy then put next.
That's awesome. Okay, yeah. Sorry.
Okay, let's go back to the story at hand. What I love most about this is at the end of the last one, Drax had gotten the symbiote, and he pretty much has taken over the ship.
I remember you telling me about
that. Yeah.
Okay.
He pretty much knocked out the rest of the crew. Finally, Eugene, a.k.a. Flash Thompson, I don't know if you knew his real first name, but
no.
They use it in here a lot more, which at first I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. He does have a weird first name, which is why he goes by Flash. Wakes up to find everyone knocked out, seeing Drax there, and then realizing they're on the symbiote's homeworld. I just have to say the art and the panels on this shit I love because it's kind of like what was it, H.G. Geiger stuff. The guy who pretty much
came H.R. Geiger?
Yeah, H.R. Geiger, who pretty much came up with the xenomorphs and everything and aliens, which is a property that I really love. Even so much as like what Drax kind of looks like in his flying ship is look almost like, you know, the main part in the first Aliens when they come and discover in the ship.
Yeah.
So the whole time I'm actually looking in the background to see if they have one hidden, like looking like it. There's a couple of scenes where it's like, I could see that being them because as the xenomorphs are adaptable, so are the symbiotes. After some infighting and deciding what's going to happen, should they really go out there, obviously these symbiotes or whatever don't have mouths, but they can talk to you, obviously, by bonding with you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where Flash is like, I think I should go out there. I should go talk to them. They haven't been attacking us yet. So he goes ahead and gets out there, and he gets latched on, and then he's telling everyone else to come out in order to communicate with them and tell their story. They need to be bonded with a symbiote there.
Okay.
And just this panel alone with the looking like from the 16th Chapel, the
Did you say 16 Chapel?
No, I meant 16.
Okay.
May have come out 16, but my mind is a 16-year-old. But just the whole, I forget what it's actually called, but the Adam and God there with the touch, you know, and the fingers.
Yeah.
How he's doing that to each one of them to just give them a piece of the symbiote. This is where, what I was saying, it's totally awesome. You just have this blank page of just text of like, you know, you've known us by many names, but we prefer to be called the Clintar. And trying to do my research, I didn't really find anything on what these beings were before in the Marvel Universe. So obviously this is trying to set the narrative of these characters being. Now, we know that there is a story arc within Spider-Man, Symbiote Planet, which was pretty much full of the Venoms and the Carnages and everything, because pretty much the only symbiotes we know are them, and they're kind of evil. Venom being kind of a halfway hero, halfway want to beat up Batman sometimes. And then it goes into a lot of dialogue. Like,
did you just say Batman?
For what?
Venom, like half good guy, half bad guy, wanting to beat up Batman.
I may have.
Either I'm so wasted I'm hearing weird things, or you're so drunk that you can't keep your fucking comic book characters straight.
I may have. I hope I didn't. I hope it's on you this time. When we re-listen to this, since we can't just pause. All I gotta say is, with how they look, they look fucking evil. Teeth out and everything. But when you find out the story of who they are intelligent creatures that goes out to try to help different species. When they bond with someone, they're looking for that perfect match.
You're looking for a soulmate.
Pretty much so. But also to give that person enhancements to make them a warrior champion for that race against other bad guys coming to attack them. Kind of to be watchers, outers, people for that subspecies.
Okay.
Which makes sense. And then they're going on about what happens, though, is sometimes their species, when they're away too long from the home planet, their minds kind of break apart. They don't want to say it's evil, but they become a little bit crazy.
Okay.
Also, sometimes when they pick a perfect specimen, chemical imbalances can also reflect on the symbiote, since they share the same pathos this is one of the things where people on the internet, me and other people in life, were arguing of, so he found Peter Parker. Peter Parker would be a in fit specimen. Why did he go? Why did the symbiote then go crazy? Some thoughts are he got it after Secret Wars, so the Beyonder could have had it in isolation for who knows how long, which means the symbiote was away from this home planet for forever. Because obviously the whole storyline in this was get the symbiote back to go home. It knew it needed to be repaired. It got repaired now. Second thing is Spider-Man was a good specimen. However, chemical imbalance, normally you think that's crazy, but he also had spider DNA running through him.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a reason why. Maybe that's a reason why you would think a perfect specimen would also be Captain America, but he has super soldier serum. maybe it is me. And that might be why he's not picked. All in all, there's also the look of Venom having gone to then Eddie Brock, who then was pretty much crazy.
Mm-hmm.
God, I forget the other guy, Scorpion. I forget his real name. He was Venom for a little bit. And then him coming on to Flash, and pretty much them just saying, Flash, Eugene, you are a great, athlete, this and that. You have that mindset of being a perfect person, and that's why the symbiote has been so good with you. He's been less Venom, but sometimes Venom has reached out, and that's just his crazy side going on. The biggest thing in this, there's just so much dialogue just explaining these symbiotes, and it really is...
That was the one thing when I was looking through. I haven't read this one yet, but this is very dialogue-heavy.
Yeah, and it's because it needs to tell the story, because they get off the planet at the end of this, so you have one book to kind of explain this whole species... Without, like I said, without retconning other things, and them to just explain, yeah, that symbiote planet happened, but that wasn't really us. This is the real home world. And to see the new, I don't know what to call it, look more mecha Venom, he got an upgrade.
Yeah.
And they pretty much said, now he's whole, he's like not going to be turning venomish evil anymore. You two are now, he's healed, you two are repaired. You guys are going to be able to share a same wavelength. He's got new powers, this and that. So pretty much this whole issue in the last story arc of this was to upgrade Venom. The other funny, cool thing was once all the rest of the Guardians got released from the symbiotes to go on their way, they're saying, we've cleaned you, cleansed you, you're pure from any infections that you had. And then, Peter Quill goes, cancer? Who had cancer? As if someone in the group might have, but now their bodies are just fully, clean, which is kind of a cool, nice little parting gift for the group.
Weren't they all in the cancer verse anyway at one point?
Yeah. So maybe that's where they got cancer.
Yeah.
From the cancer verse. All in all, it was a really interesting good read. If you like Venom, if you like Spider-Man mythos, if you like, the symbiotes and everything, it's a must pick up. Because I'm not even doing it justice trying to speak, because I'm not doing well at that either.
This is a little off subject, but it's basically with that new Venom upgrade, you basically have a new character look and design. I'm always curious as to when they do that, is it the artist that's working on the book at that time, that they get to decide how to do it? Did Marvel say, hey, we're doing it, here's our basic design? Like, maybe they went to another artist and said, we just want some character designs, here's what we're looking at. And then they picked from about five, and they're like, okay, here's the rough idea, go with it. I'm always curious about that.
I don't know particularly about this. I do know when they came up with the new Iron Man, Superior Iron Man, it was the team that came up with the thoughts of it, because the new Iron Man, he kind of has an open face type, helmet, which can then morph, with the liquid.
Yeah, well, metal. It's a much superior look.
Yes. But from what I've seen was that the artist had a couple different sketches on how it looked, kind of just the headband and this and that, and then they kind of decided this is the coolest of them. So I don't know if there's a head person at Marvel, if it is the person at the books, but it seems like there's people that would get together.
Yeah, I'm not 100% positive, and it's just something that I've always been kind of... Well, and I, from what I do understand, I think it varies from situation to situation as well. So that can make a can definitely make a difference.
Yeah, but, and the big spoiler alert: Peter Quill is now the king of the Spartax Empire.
What? Okay.
Yeah.
That means nothing to me, so...
Well, it'll mean something when the whole universes collide, and then it doesn't matter that he got elected or not. Because screw Marvel. I'm kind of mad at them right now.
Okay. I don't know what you're talking about, but we'll figure it out. We'll get there. All right, Tony. That pretty much wraps it up for Off the Shelf.
Yes, it does.
Brought to you by Motor City Comic Con.
Get there.
It feels kind of like home to say that again. Like it's just.
Oh, well, I was just waiting for you to mess up on the showcase showdown.
Suburban Collection Showplace. Yeah, the only thing I'm going to screw up for a while is going to be the dates because, you know,
that we don't have those locked in yet.
Yeah, we do.
No, but like in our brains. Oh.
Yeah, we're going to go to Motor City in April.
Not August.
Yeah. All right. Let's do some news because we have a number of
okay,
things.
Okay, so before we get to news, I just need to bring back a segment that me and my brother talked about before about events. I think we called it Seasonal Brews or something. But
Something like that.
Just so I can talk about another book because I really feel like I need to, only because of one particular thing. Because it blows my mind that they revealed it within here. And it is The Amazing Spider-Man number 13, part 5 of the Spider-Verse. Now, I'll make this short and sweet for you, Derek, so I don't talk too much about all my books this week. However, there was a key point within here that Doc Ock Spider-Man has his little Anna Maria, like, transistor radio type thing helping him out.
Mm-hmm.
And he's trying to get her to help scan these scrolls. All of a sudden, you have Peter Parker Spider-Man, who we've already established within this thing, the reason why they're both existing. Peter is already known, Spock, you know, Spider-Man, Spock-Ock is there.
Spock-Ock.
Not Spock-Ock. Spider-Ock. Spock, we'll just call him Spock for now on. He's
yeah, live long and prosper.
Nanu, nanu.
Except he doesn't.
No, but he was going to kill Peter, but then thinking that this is his younger self. It was when... Spider-Man, Peter goes, you based, you know, that off of Anna Maria, that all of a sudden Doc Ock Spider-Man, or Superior Spider-Man, realizes, wait, how would he know who that is unless he is from after, which means I lost, and he wins, and he comes back. That, to me, is a huge, one of the biggest questions, besides all the other shit and the team-ups and everything that's going on with this universe, it's the time travel part. You know, you have this past, you know, person who now knows the future that he's going to lose. Is he going to come back? Because I would love to have him come back. Because that would be cool. Or he'd come back as a ghost, and that'd be cool with that too. But
There's some new action figures. They aren't that new. They've been out for a while. Some Spider-Man action figures, and one of them is a Superior Spider-Man.
Oh.
But it's $20, and I just can't spend $20 on a fucking action figure. I just can't do it.
Depends on how many
points of articulation. Points,
yeah.
I think 14.
I'm so glad you said that because I would have fucked up that.
What? Tony talk good words.
All right. I just had to. It was a really cool reveal within this that was just. When you're looking at it, you flip the page, you're like, wait, what? You just. And him being a superior intellect would be like, I need to somehow fix this. Knowing the readers know he can't fix it because he goes back. So what's going to happen? And I don't know, but in a couple weeks, it will be all revealed.
Well, in a couple weeks, it won't matter.
Why not?
Because Secret Wars is changing everything.
Oh, yeah, and that's why you reminded me. I was all happy for Marvel again when I got to talk about that, and now I'm mad again.
Yeah, so it was announced earlier this week that Marvel is basically is going to start doing a combined universe. After the conclusion of Secret Wars.
And that, to me, pisses me off because I've loved Marvel for having this multi-universe, for having all these what-ifs when you've read those books, realizing that was actually a world, and you could sometimes revisit that. If they don't need to go back to it, but that it was there. In your mind, it was a real thing that has, canon is everything to me. don't just fucking retcon everything. And that's what I've loved about the What Ifs, because they just happen. They exist in this other universe, and you gave it a number.
Here's, you know, I guess here's the thing. If it's not brand new origins for everybody, and, you know, I mean, because realistically, the only thing that's going to happen in my mind is the 616 is still going to be mostly the 616. But you know, we're going to have Miles Morales come over.
Mm-hmm.
Probably have a Spider-Gwen.
And that's the thing. That's the thing that I don't understand. She's getting her own series right now. If she comes to this main universe, who's she gonna fight? Who's she gonna fit in? 616 Spider-Man characters or her characters, who seem a little newer and fresher? I would rather read a book about her in her own world. Maybe have some coming over to this one, or Peter going over there, because that means new to me. Just have another person that has webbing swinging around New York with Peter Parker. No, that's not all new.
As long as Spider-Ham is part of, you know, the real world, I'm fine. Just all Spider-Ham all the time.
I like what you're thinking.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, I'm serious though. Going back onto what I was reading, they were saying that they could pretty much bring anyone that they wanted back. But which ones? Which ones do you think are cooler? And how do they then interact with everyone else? Do you bring a Wolverine from a different timeline or a different world now here, and that's Wolverine resurrected or whatever? How does he interact with all these other people that is not him? Unless you have those main characters that have pretty much fought each other and then teamed up in a book, there's going to be some big rifts amongst people. You have one world where, you know, everyone hates Tony Stark, which they kind of do now, but that's, and he was never, yeah. But he wasn't part of the Avengers, let's say, and he gets to become the new person in this world. What happens to Superior Spider-Man, or Iron Man, whatever, Superior something or other? I'm just so confused on how it's going to happen. I really don't think it's going to be the end of all the worlds, but I do, and I'm dreading that.
Well, and you're mostly pissed about the Age of Apocalypse going away.
Well, it kind of already did. I just like that if they could revisit it.
Yeah.
But it still goes to the 1985 world. That's a world within the Marvel Comics. There's the MC2, which I remember reading a couple of those, which is another predominant one. There's the Earth-X world. I mean,
I don't know how many thousands of actual worlds they have out there, but, I mean, I remember looking on, like, a Wikipedia at one point at all the different universes that they had. Just, you know, checking stuff out, because it started when I was reading Exiles.
Okay, yeah, because
Exiles just jumped from one world to the next to the next. And, I mean, you think about every issue of Exiles basically went to a new world, or at least every couple, they went to a new world. And you think about all those books, let alone all the other universes that have been touched on in the 75 years that, you know, Marvel's been around. It's a lot there.
You know what actually I would be okay with?
If they brought Blink back?
Well, they probably will. I mean,
I don't know. They probably won't.
Thoughts is that this whole thing is going to converge into a timeline that more or less goes with the movies. You're going to have a world where it removes Nick Fury, old man Nick Fury, and has Samuel Jackson, Nick Fury.
They've already done that.
They've done it, but now they can make it official. Like, there really was no other thing. They say they're not going to change any of the past and reboot anything, but I don't see how you do that.
They came out last week, and I talked about this with Jay, too, and I cannot remember who it was, if it was Axel Alonso or one of the other big guys at Marvel, saying that the movies are going to be the movies and the comics are going to be the comics. Now, what he did say, you know, he goes, our movies, he goes, we're going to draw some inspiration from the comics. He goes, and the comics are going to draw some inspiration from the movies. He goes, these writers are writing their own stories. And he said, they watch the movies. They're fans of these. Of course, they're going to be inspired by some of the things that are in there. He goes, but just because something's going on in one or the other doesn't mean that it has to happen in both, nor will it necessarily. He goes, these are two separate universes. They're going to be, you know, separate. Unless Secret Wars combines the movie universe.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But I don't see that happening.
Here's a big thing, though. All the artists and writers have known for the past year, you're going to finish your runs, because they're going to have a huge mix-up on things, too. So that's why you get a cool new Venom suit, because why not do that now? Because who knows if it's going to carry over.
Well, okay, now here's the other thing, though, that where I'm not worried about the movie universe taking over. Basically, you know, what whoever it was that was talking said, it's too difficult to have pure synchronicity between the movie world and the comic book world. It's damn near impossible. And if you think about it, I mean, fuck, I don't know how much you got into, you know, when you were in college. I know you had some film and video classes, but you get into the way that movies are, when they're originally scripted, and then what's actually shot, yeah. And then once it's shot, what they have to go back and reshoot, and then when they run it by test audiences, what they go back and fix after that. So there's no way that they could actually plan the same thing in comics, and unless they had to wait for the movies to come out. But then by the time, you can't set anything up in the comics to help build up for the movie. You're constantly 3 months behind minimum. That is an impossible task to happen. So people need to chill the fuck out and just go, there's going to be some shared stuff. There's going to be some differences. Deal with it.
Are you, though, under the mindset of this is actually going to be something that's going to change the Marvel Universe as we know it?
No.
So it's going to go back to status quo eventually?
Eventually. No one stays dead, including universes.
Means the Watcher's coming back. All right.
Yeah. So, a little bit more Marvel news. This one is something that I'm very excited to see. The Inhuman Special, Volume 1, Number 1. Is going to be coming out here on April 22nd. And it's written by Jeff Loveness and penciled by our good friend Ryan Lee.
Yeah, that is fucking awesome. I can't wait to get an interview with this elusive bastard who couldn't give us the scoop, but now that we know, we are going to...
Oh, he can't say anything.
I know he can't, and we're just kidding, Ryan.
Yeah.
But we aren't kidding that we do need you on the show because it's been a while.
He already knows. I actually talked to him the other day. Yeah, so actually Ryan should be here on the show probably within the next few weeks.
Awesome.
Yeah. So, all right. Powers, the PlayStation Network original series.
See, and that's the part when reading this, I didn't know it was just an original series for them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it did get... a March 10th release date on there, so you guys can look that up. That's got Brian Michael... was based on the property of Powers, written by Brian Michael Bendis and drawn by Michael Avon Emming. So keep your eyes peeled for that, kids.
Did... Remind me if I'm wrong, which then just remind me, because I probably am. Wasn't there a failed pilot to a Powers before? Was there a TV show before of it?
Not that I know of.
Okay, because I just know that always hearing that, you know, that name, like, I swear to God, there was something.
There might have been something else in the works that never came through, but I don't know. More TV news. DC has a new animated series coming out on the CW called Vixen, which comes out of the pages of Arrow, basically.
Okay, is it sidekick person or?
No, she's African American character, so that's always good to see. Number two, female. So it's kind of cool just to see a female getting her own, you know.
It's weird. There's been more coming off of Flash than, well, okay, I guess two now. really, or not even Flash. You said Arrow, which Flash would have been what I meant to say. I'm just gonna shut up.
Anyway, it's. It's following her as being the main character on there. So, looks kind of cool. I don't really know anything about her, like other than what I read, which basically she has, she got like a, from her parents, she got a special totem, which basically gives her the powers of different animals. So she can use her totem and go, I want to have the power of an owl, or I want to have the power of an elephant, or whatever, from what I'm guessing. from the way it was written. So, looks kind of cool. But, yeah, that'll be the CW's seed. I don't know what seed is.
Like, I don't know either. Was that the same, like, their network?
Yeah, CW seed.
Huh. Maybe they're coming out with a new network.
I don't know. Maybe if...
Well, half their shows now are kind of super-powered anyway, so maybe that's the superpower channel.
Yeah.
X-Men Apocalypse has added some new, not characters, new actors.
Cast?
Yes, cast. That's the word I meant to say. Thank you, Derek. to their cast.
Oh, my God. I don't know what the hell. Like, how many brain cells you've killed this weekend, but, dude. I mean, I know we're drunk on comics, but... You might want to think about cutting back a
little. Okay. I can at least explain this next part, I hope. Sophie Turner from Game of Thrones. Ty Sheridan. I forget what she was in. And then, or he's in. And then Alexandria Shipp. Sophie's going to be the new Jean Grey. Ty's going to be the new Scott Summers, and Alexandria is going to be the new Storm. Looking at, they're obviously younger actors and actresses, so they're, I guess, doing the time warp again, like, with Age of Apocalypse. Like, obviously they're not having the cast from the first X-Men movies, even though they kind of showed up at the end of the last movie when Wolverine came to the present, and time travel, it's weird.
Well, yeah, but everything changed.
Yeah, true. But, I mean, no, I'm not saying anything against that. It's just they look a lot younger than what they've been portrayed as in the movies.
Okay, so the last movie took place in, like, the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
The first X-Men came out in the 90s. So would you say that Storm and Cyclops and Jean Grey all looked like they were in their probably... Late 30s?
Then, yeah. I mean, Halle Berry, how old was she then?
Probably late 30s.
Yeah, or early. So they look more like adults. What was his name? Marsden Dude or whatever, the Cyclops then?
Oh, James Marsden?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he looked older. These kids look like kids.
But, okay, so this is going to be in the 1980s. So they're, I don't know, we'll see what they look like.
Oh, yeah, that is the setting.
Yeah.
All right, so that makes sense.
Yeah, they're age appropriate.
So they're younger versions of those other characters that happen later.
Yeah.
Thank you for schooling me.
But yeah, so excuse me again. I don't know. We'll see what goes on there. There's a couple different things that we want to talk about as far as good places that you guys could put your money. The first one is a little bit more of a fun thing, and as fans of comic books in general, I think this is probably one of the best places to put your money to, is the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. I'd say this is a top three place for me, you know, that we can go and do that. But Nick Barucci, who is the CEO of Dynamic Forces, has a very large personal art collection, and what he's doing is he's putting a bunch of his original art up for sale. And it's arters.
creators. Pull a Tony.
Yeah, creators or artists, such as Patrick Zercher, Tom Rainey, Scott Hanna, and Mark Bagley. And you can actually go check this out at dynamicforces.com and look for, like, if you just search original art, you'll see it. What they're doing is, like, if you go on and you're like, okay, I want a page from Patrick Zercher, for $75 plus shipping, you get a page from Patrick Zercher. You don't know which page you're going to get, but you're getting a page. So you could get an awesome splash page. You could get just a basic sequence panel page just showing time elapse. I don't know. But there are examples of some of the pages up there. Really cool. So go check that out if you want to own some original art for a great price. I mean, it's hard to get a page for under $100 anywhere. So, you know.
And that is a very unique take on selling art as well as for a good cause. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We have a Super Bowl coming up next weekend, and obviously sports and comics don't always mix, but when you have two famous actors, the Chrises, making bets on the internet, it kind of converges the two. Chris Evans started off the battle with talking to Chris Pratt. Chris Evans, for those not in the know, Captain America in the movies, and Chris Pratt being Star-Lord from Guardians of the Galaxy. And he goes, "Well, well, well, at Pratt, looks like our teams are going into battle. For the next 2 weeks, you're not my friend, you are my enemy." And that started off the replies from Chris Pratt saying, "Well, there is only one Captain America, and that's Russell Wilson," which I guess that's his nickname in the team.
I don't know who that is, but that's okay.
Okay. But Chris Evans goes, "Those are fighting words, and what are the stakes?" And this is where it gets interesting and cool. So if the Seattle Seahawks win, who Chris Pratt is rooting for, Captain America has to fly out to Seattle.
Chris Evans.
Did I say?
You said Captain America.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so I was saying, you're making me think that I don't know how to say my words, and then I forget what I just said. And then he has to fly out. Chris Evans has to fly out, wear his Captain America uniform at the Children's Hospital out there, waving the 12th man flag.
It would be way better if he had to fly across the country wearing his Captain America outfit.
That would actually be even funny.
Hey, what's up?
And then vice versa, if the Patriots wins, who Chris Evans wants, Chris Pratt has to fly out to a Boston Children's Hospital in his Star-Lord uniform. I need to lay off the suds, man. Wearing also a Tom Brady shirt over his Star-Lord uniform.
Who?
Tom Brady.
Tom Football. Brady, man. I was making a Star Wars joke.
Oh. I thought you were like, really? You don't know who that is? Yeah. Wow. But, yeah, so that's kind of a cool little, I don't know. Yeah.
Fun little bet.
Yep.
So, if you guys are familiar, and if you've been on pretty much any con circuit, at least in the Midwest, and I'm sure all over, you know, the East Coast and probably even all over the West Coast too. Tommy Castillo is an amazing artist who is one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet on the con circuit. And, like, Tony and I met Tommy, I think, officially 6 years ago at Motor City. And just stood around, like, you know, chatting with him, you know, we chatted with him a little bit at the show, but got to sit there and just get to know him on a personal level in the bar, hanging out with him. And it was John Schneider from Dukes of Hazzard.
Oh, yeah.
Smallville.
Yep.
Just had a blast talking to those guys. Tommy has been battling diabetes.
Yes, and that's one of the big reasons why I want to bring this up, because I never knew that. And being a fellow diabetic, I love when more people talk about it and the complications that come with the disease. Big parts being sometimes you have to have your extremities amputated because of blood flowing through your body is a lot worse than a normal person's that has normal blood sugar. Blood flows greatly through the eyes as well, which can really impair your vision.
Yeah, so basically, Tommy needs to have surgery. Without the surgery, he will probably lose his sight within a year or possibly even less than that. He's going to need at least two treatments. Each surgery is $4,000 per eye. They're trying to donate or trying to raise $20,000 right now. If you go to youcaring.com, that's youcaring.com, look up Tommy Castillo, and you guys can donate, whether it's a dollar, if it's five, you know, if you have tens, hundreds, thousands, whatever you have, it'd be a great thing to help him out. You know, this is one of the hardest things for artists and creators is that they don't have always the same insurance programs because they're independent contractors, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, they work for hire. So please, guys, go help him out to at least, you know, take a look and spread the word. Anything that can be done would be awesome. So, all right. There was three other books coming out that I just want to mention here real quick. From Oni Press, there's a new book called Hellbreak, written by Cohen Bunn. And it just, from what I gathered, it's kind of like almost a Dante's Inferno, where there's, you know, thousands of hells with thousands of different, you know,
hellish stuff.
Yeah. That's going to be kind of an interesting thing on there. Brian Chirilla is doing art and Dave Stewart on color. So that book has a creator team up, like no other. Dark Horse has a book coming out in September as well, which kind of in the same vein is called Hellbound. And basically what this one is there's a couple disgraced FBI agents who are investigating murders, but there's kind of a bad guy who's wearing junkyard armor, which that just really, I don't know, the look of it. Did you see that image?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. It's fucking crazy looking. Victor Gishler and Ricardo Bricciali are doing that book. Check that one out. Last book I wanted to talk about.
And this one just looks so much fun.
Yeah, Scotty Young from Image has a new title coming, I Hate Fairyland. And
yep, he's reuniting with his Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz collaborator, Jean-Francisco Bouillier.
Mm-hmm.
The panels that they have that we can see right now, yeah, this little girl's tearing it up.
But the great thing is, this little girl who was 10 when she got to Fairyland is still in the little 10-year-old's body, but it's 30 years later, so it's a 40-year-old woman stuck in a little girl's body just taking a battle axe to shit and guns a-blazing. This one's going to be fun, so that's pretty much it on everything I got for news.
All right, I'm done with it, too. So what do you got for Indy Turnpike?
Indy Turnpike this week.
I feel like my brother hasn't been here in forever. I don't know why that came out, but there's something wrong with me today.
Well, at least you said that part right. I've got the Burning Fields, number one, from Boom Studios. This is issue 1 of 8. This is written by Michael Marici and Tim Daniel and illustrated by Colin Lorimer. Colors by Joanna LaFuente and letters by Jim Campbell. First thing I'm going to say about this book, this is a mature read. Because it's gruesome. I'm going to show you this book starts with you see this man saying stuff in a different language, and there's little captions that translate in there where he says the river boils with the blood of his vengeance, the mountain vanishes in the shadow of his strength. Asag slay the father and the children of sin, tear their flesh. I mean, it's very, very violent. And the first thing that what happens on the second page of this book is a man's tongue is ripped out with a pair of pliers.
Oh.
Yeah. It is fucking brutal. The book basically, there's a lot going on here, and I'm actually not going to get into it too much just because trying to explain this after just one issue, I would have preferred to wait until the second issue, but I think this is one of those books that you kind of need to have a little notice about this one. If for some reason you missed it, it should be brought to your attention. If you weren't sure, I think you need to know what's going on here to, you know, so I can kind of help people make that decision. It was an awesome book, but this is not going to be for everybody because there's people like Kevin that
he would get disgusted by some of that scenery.
Yeah, I mean, there's some stuff in there that you're going to see in this book that will make the average person queasy. However, with that said, this is beautifully executed. Really, really fucking dark. Lots of intricate different layers, lots of stuff going on. Everything, like, there's different people, different casts, different, you know, areas, and you're seeing everything is slowly lining up. And this is going to be one of those these series that Boom is notorious for, where this thing is going to just fucking like blow up, I think, with a big bang as far as how this story unfolds. So go check out the Burning Fields, guys. But like I said, beware if you're on the queasy side. So next up, yeah, we've got some Booze in a Book.
Yep.
Brought to you by inkwhiskey.com. And we've got a little contest going on, which we'll get to right after your pairing,
I think. This week has Avengers number 40. To quick explain why it's paired with this beer, title of this issue is We Three Kings. And throughout it, it has this backstory of the King's Blade talking to T'Challa, Black Panther, something that has been known in the comic books recently. Namor attacked Wakanda during the whole hammer event that we don't really talk about, and pretty much annihilated.
Except we do talk about it all the time.
And since that, there's been bad blood between the two of them. Well, all I'm going to say is a King's Blade switched hands multiple times because T'Challa then gave it to his sister, who was the queen of Wakanda. You see in here, she then gives the King's Blade back to him. And what he does with that, I'm just going to leave it be, but holy shit, I want to reveal what happened in here.
I
want to
know what you want to drink with it.
Oh, the simplest pairing ever, the king of beers, Budweiser.
Oh.
So, you drink one of those, you'll...
Wait, but I got a better one.
What?
It could be the Budweiser, didn't they have that black label shit? Because it's Black Panther?
There we go.
Yeah.
Even better. So, Budweiser Black Select.
Or whatever the hell it was.
No, it's called Black, I believe. No, maybe it wasn't.
Oh, well, Black Label. Oh, Black Label. Yeah, but didn't they have some Black Label shit at one point?
Yeah, maybe they still do. Yeah. Pick up a Budweiser. Pick up something.
Just go drink.
Yeah.
Read your books.
Speaking of reading, what else did you read this week for last call?
Before we do that,
we got the contest.
Yeah. So, guys, started last week, and you can still enter with last week's. You have to email us at drunkoncomics@gmail.com and let us know if you're following us on Facebook and or Twitter, because we'll need to be able to reach you. So this is for followers. You just got to be liking us on one of those pages, and we're happy with that. But email us your answer at drunkoncomics@gmail.com. We're not going to sell your email. We're not going to spam you or anything like that. But we don't want one person to do all the work for the answer, and then everybody else to just go, oh, yeah, it's what he said. So, but, Tony, what's the question this week?
All right. This person, along with his buddy Peter, created an awesome cast of characters from what is rumored the same chemical that created Daredevil.
All right. So, email us your answer, and the winner will receive two retro gaming flasks from inkwhiskey.com, and we will send those to you free of charge. So, all right, last call, Tone. What else did you have?
Tooth and Claw number 3.
How is that?
I still love it. It's an amazing book, and the images are just fucking gorgeous.
You know,
I mean, you can't go wrong with Belair. She's amazing.
Yeah, well, I mean, her colors are fucking fantastic. I mean, she brings everything to life. But, you know, I had it in my hand and I put it down, and I just don't know. Like, I like it, but I don't know if I'm sold on it.
It's so original enough, so much so from everything else. You've talked about something that was kind of time traveling, which is kind of like Terminator. You talked about something that was zombies, which can all be, you know, mm-hmm, sent back to Romero. This is unique. It's a definite pickup.
Yeah. Okay. Rein number 1, R-E-Y-N, from Image. Interesting book. I'm going to pick up the next issue. So I'll let you know from there. If you hear me say Rein number 2, then it's worth that. It's definitely worth continuing on. The most fun book I read, though, this week is Penny Dora and the Wishing Box from Michael Stock and Sina Grace. This is it's an all-ages book, but fuck yeah, this is a great book. Tony, what else is in your stack there?
Deadpool's Art of War. It was just a fun little mini-series of him trying to sell his book. And then Superior Iron Man is another one that I just wanted to talk about. huge reveals in there. I don't read a lot of Daredevil, but I want to read more Daredevil because he's been in this enough that it's interesting to say the least.
I did pick up Wolverine's number 2 and 3 because I missed number 2 last week. So grab those. Dead Letters, number 7 from Boom Studios. That's still one of the prettiest fucking books you'll ever see in your life. And then Rumble, number 2, which had the Ninja Straw Man ghost guy.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah. So those are all the ones I think were worthy of an extra shout-out. So that going to do it for us?
That will do it for us.
All right, guys. So don't forget Motor City. Don't forget, send us your questions. We've got 3 more weeks for the contest.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get 1 entry per episode. So send away. We did receive a good number of entries for the first round.
That's what I like to hear.
I will say, not all of the answers were correct.
Really?
There were a lot of really close ones and a lot of really good guesses, but not all of them were correct. So you'll get 1 entry per correct answer, 1 entry per week.
Yep.
So, all right, guys, keep reading your comics. We'll be back next week to talk to you more about them then.
And I might be able to speak good.